their dreams and goals, including becoming U.S. citizens, earning their GEDs, securing job opportunities, and more. Registration information for this event is available at litnetwork.org/RBTW2025. Deadline to register is Sunday, April 20th.
Madison Labor Radio. Labor Radio is dedicated to bringing new information. Welcome to Madison Labor Radio. It's dedicated to bringing news, information, and cultural events focused on working people and the labor movement to the Madison area and surrounding communities. I'm Jimmy Coonan, member of Carpenters Local 314. Your support is necessary to make Labor Radio and all the great programming on WART possible.
Hi, and I'm Sandy Park, a retiree from both AFSCME and American Federation of Teachers. Today we share details on a rally for higher education and a rally for childcare, discuss the large number of IRS employees leaving their jobs, learn more about the whistleblower at the NLRB, celebrate National Poetry Month, and much more.
Students, staff, faculty, union supporters, and community members rallied at Library Mall on UW-Madison campus as part of a National Day of Action for Higher Education. The event took place at noon on Thursday, April 17th. It was organized by leaders of the Madison Teachers Assistance Association, or TAA, and United Faculty and Staff, or UFAS, Labor Radio, spoke with Madeline Toff, co-president of UW-Madison TAA, prior to the rally and then attended the rally.
This day of action is a call for higher education across the U.S. We're one of several hundred events today to resist the attacks of the Trump administration and protect students and the workers on campuses. We're trying to work with a lot of student groups and unions on campus to bring as many people in as we can.
What are the demands?
They center around the role for grad workers. We teach, we do research. We are leaders in defending our institutions against right-wing attacks. We are calling on administration to not capitulate to the attacks on international students, not work with ICE, and then to bargain with workers. So there's a lot of grad unions right now that are trying to go through negotiations with their administration, and they're being stalled. They aren't getting the kinds of things they need, like a living wage. And then specifically on our campus, we're continuing to demand a lot of the things that we've been working on for the past few years as a union: 12 weeks of paid family and medical leave, living wage for all grad workers, meet and confer relationship, meaning that we're able to sit down with administration regularly. This has been a demand shared across the UW system. They're worried that if they look union friendly, that Republicans in the state legislature are going to slash funding for the UW system. But the reality is they're doing that no matter what. What would be the strongest is to have a united front against Republicans who want to restrict funding or cut indirect costs that would harm scientific research. It would be much more powerful if we had the unions with administration working against that.
Hey, hey, ho, ho, funding cuts have got to go. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The first thing we're asking for is an ongoing meet and confer relationship so UW-Madison and its workers can respond to dynamic threats to higher education together.
Yes. Woo! Yeah. Woo!
Next, that UW-Madison join the Big Ten Mutual Defense Compact and commit to share resources and strategic support. We demand that UW and UWPD will continue UWPD's policy of not providing information or cooperating with ICE. That UW staff and instructors should not let ICE into private spaces, including classrooms, labs, and offices. That they provide timely alerts of ICE activity on or near campus. And finally, that UW provide legal and administrative support for students and workers facing deportation or attacks on their status at the U.S. Specifically, contesting the visa revocations that have been inflicted upon students and staff and committing to allowing affected students to continue their studies from abroad. We also have demands in line with our ongoing campaigns, a full living wage for graduate workers, including remission of all mandatory fees, full funding of existing commitments to graduate workers, 12 weeks of paid family and medical leave, and a commitment to intellectual freedom and autonomy in the classroom.
I'm Bennett McIntosh, and I'm a steward for the History Department. We've seen attacks on higher education from all directions. We want to show that this fight is everyone's fight, from organized labor to immigrants to just the right to have a good higher education. We are calling for the administration to join the Big Ten Mutual Defense Compact, which is to be a group of universities standing together against the cuts and intimidation to higher ed, pooling legal teams, pooling resources, pooling communication capacity. Reach out to Chancellor Mnuchin, support joining the Big Ten Mutual Defense Compact. That would be one great thing that you can do.
From A Day of Action for Higher Education, this is Janine Ramsey reporting for Labor Radio. UAW Local 291 remains on strike against Cummins Incorporated in Oshkosh. Labor Radio talked to workers at a march and rally that was held on Saturday.
It's exactly 1 month into UAW Local 291 strike against Cummins Incorporated in Oshkosh since March 18th, and management will be back at the table this coming week, starting April 22nd, or so they say. The union, which is less than pleased with Cummins management's commitment to sit down at the table so far, wasn't going to wait. Last Saturday, April 12th, hundreds of striking workers and union and community supporters gathered at the Local 291 Union Hall near the Cummins plant for a rally and march, demanding good faith bargaining from management. UAW workers at the plant currently owned by the Columbus, Indiana-based Cummins, manufacture heavy truck axles. While owners have come and gone at what is for now the Cummins plant, the UAW and its workers have been there for 90 years, working through whatever corporation comes in to make money off their labor. Before the march around the plant, John Drew, UAW Wisconsin State Citizenship and Legislative, or CAP, Council Chair, who was one of the many workers and union officials to speak, addressed the crowd that filled the Union Hall parking lot before the march.
You know, Cummins made record profits last year, okay? You deserve a fair share of those profits, and you deserve enough time off that you can enjoy it with your friends and your family and have an actual life. But instead of a fair contract, they spend it on what they pay the CEO last year. Anybody remember? $24 million over the last couple of years. I think it was $13 million last year. They buy back stock and they spend billions of dollars inflating the stock price so they can get richer and richer, and they leave you guys fighting for what's left. So this fight here in Oshkosh, it is part of a bigger fight against the billionaires that control the economy, that control our government, that control our political system.
16-year worker and Local 291 steward Alan McKnight describes what it's been like to work under Cummins.
The only changes I've seen are things are getting much worse. And like in every aspect. Some of the things that happen, people looking for a half hour to find the parts they need. The inventory is irrationally disorganized. It is, there's a military term for it, but I'm not going to use that. I don't think they're trying to sabotage the business. They've made it clear that this is going to be their main plant, but they just won't. They're doing the corporate shuffles in regards to how they handle this contract. We haven't had a significant raise in 5 years, so while our grocery bills and our utilities have all gone up and our gas prices have all gone up, they won't compensate us.
Linda Schuhart, a retired worker who worked 17 years at the plant that is now owned by Cummins, told of how the new management changed the retirement plan.
If you had a pension, you still keep it, but if you are a new hire, they don't give you a pension anymore. It's all based on 401k.
Have you heard from anyone, any workers, about how that 401k has been, especially like in the last couple of weeks or so?
Well, chicken dump. It's gone down. It's with the stock market. Unless you have a lot of money in the stock market, you don't become rich. You know, it's your millionaires and your billionaires that are making the money off the stock market right now.
Local 291 workers are holding fast to the picket line, but Cummins management has brought in strike breakers from the south. Labor Radio is walking beside 291 local president Ryan Compton on Saturday's march when a completely unmarked white van surrounded in black tinted windows drove by toward the plant entrance.
Work-life balance all the time.
Scab cab!
Yeah, really.
Scab cab!
These things with the tinted windows and the whole thing, huh?
Okay.
As unmarked?
Yes.
Do you know the company that's bringing them in?
Have no idea. We know that they have people from a plant in Laurinburg, North Carolina, Cummins facility, and then we're the other ones we don't know. We've heard from Tennessee, from down south somewhere. They have them been locked up in the True Hilton Hotel.
Despite the difficulties of the strike, Compton feels confident of victory.
I feel fantastic. The spirits have been strong this whole time. Today, you know, it just shows the rank and file numbers that, you know, people out in the community know what's going on. They support us. That's by far the biggest thing, is the community support, that people are thinking about them, people care, people, man, understand what's going on.
There was Ryan Compton, president of UAW Local 291 in Oshkosh, which is striking Cummins Incorporated there. Supporters can join the picket line from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday or deliver strike donations to the Local 291 Union Hall at 1118 High Avenue in Oshkosh. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Jaboski.
Can't seem to face up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. Can't sleep cause my bed's on fire. Don't touch me, I'm a real live wire. Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa. Better run, 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 run away.
Wednesday was Child Care Advocacy Day, and child care workers and their supporters rallied at the state capitol. Greg Jaboski reports. He really does.
For the health of our kids, what do we need? Invest in child care now. For the strong communities, what do we need?
Invest in child care now.
For the strong workforce, what do we need?
Invest in child care now!
Last Wednesday, April 16th, was Child Care Advocacy Day. And in Madison, over 350 child care providers and their supporters marched down State Street from the Concourse Hotel and Governor's Club to the steps of the state capitol, where they held a rally, chanting and holding yellow signs demanding, Invest in Child Care Now! The event was organized by the Wisconsin Early Childhood Association, the Wisconsin Head Start Association, and Raising Wisconsin, and demanded public support in the state's budget for parents and children that includes adequate funding, of programs like Head Start, early education, and support for child care professionals. Toshiba Adams, a full-time instructor and instructional chair of early childhood education at Milwaukee Area Technical College and a member of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Association's board of directors, stressed the importance of fair compensation for child care workers.
So I just want to start by saying I'm so honored and delighted to be here with all of you today, to be here to stand in solidarity with and also in support of Wisconsin's early education workforce. This is a workforce that has demonstrated great resiliency, demonstrates compassion, and demonstrates great commitment to children and families all across Wisconsin.
Child care holds up our society, says Adams, and deserves respect and compensation.
To be perfectly clear, this workforce serves as the foundation of Wisconsin's economic infrastructure, right? It's a workforce that gives so much, but receives so little in return, to the point to where they have very little to give to their own families. That's not right. But this is the reality of our workforce here in Wisconsin. But it's a disgusting reality. It's a disgrace the way that these individuals are being treated, and it's unacceptable.
One idea to help fund the child care needs of workers came from an unexpected source, a business owner, Sachin Shivaram, the CEO of Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry.
Absolutely nothing to get that tax credit. We don't have to invest in any capital equipment. We don't have to train any workers. We don't have to give back to the community. Nothing. You know, how about we make that tax credit contingent on helping the child care situation?
Brenda Mateo currently works for Head Start, but early in her life grew up in poverty in Arcadia, Wisconsin, who herself became a single mother and who says her life was changed when she became a Head Start participant.
An investment in child care is an investment in the future of our state. Programs like Head Start and child care don't just help kids, they help families and are the foundations of a strong community and economy. I am living proof that when we invest in children and families, we are planting seeds of hope, change, opportunity, that help change their life trajectory forever. So we need to make that happen.
That was Brenda Mateo of Head Start and herself an alumna of the Head Start program, speaking Wednesday at a rally at the Wisconsin State Capitol on Child Care Advocacy Day. The rally was followed by child care advocacy sessions with state legislators inside the Capitol building. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Jaboski.
According to the New York Times, about 22,000 Internal Revenue Service employees have accepted the administration's offer to resign in September. Keith Steffen has more details.
The administration has offered a deferred resignation to many employees in federal service, including the IRS. Employees who accept the offer will be on paid administrative leave through September and then leave their IRS jobs. Some employees who took the offer might still be allowed to opt out of resigning. The IRS had about 100,000 employees before Trump took office. Around 5,000 employees have already resigned since January. An additional 7,000 probationary employees were laid off, though those firings have been contested in court. If those layoffs take effect, the agency would lose about a third of its workforce this year. Additional staff reductions could be announced in the future. The Times predicts that fewer employees will probably decrease the amount of revenue the federal government is able to collect. The cuts have already caused the IRS to abandon some audits, and taxpayers may feel free to try to avoid paying taxes if the IRS lacks the staff and capacity to monitor those payments. One of the resignations was the acting commissioner, Melanie Krause. She and other administrators left the agency partly because of an agreement to give access to taxpayer information to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The Trump administration's decision to use IRS data to help deport undocumented immigrants has caused widespread concern. The IRS traditionally has been required to keep taxpayer information confidential. I'm Keith Steffen for Labor Radio.
We'll be right back.
A whistleblower revealed how sensitive data is being accessed by DOGE. Kara Weidel has the story.
Donald Trump's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, is collecting sensitive data from all over the government. What is the source of this revelation? A whistleblower at the National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB, Daniel Baroulis, filed an official disclosure to Congress. Baroulis spoke to NPR about his concerns. His job is protecting the data that can be accessed remotely from the cloud. DOGE directed him to stop the recording of who accessed the data. DOGE appeared to go to great lengths to try to cover its tracks. This potentially sensitive data includes private legal notes in ongoing labor investigations or confidential lists of union organizers. Musk or anyone else who gets this data, including lists of union organizers, could blacklist people or fire them. They could spy on competitors and get big advantages in court or in business. There are ongoing investigations into Elon Musk's companies, including SpaceX and Tesla. The removal of evidence of potentially suspicious activity concerns Baroulis. The NLRB has social security numbers, private addresses, healthcare data, immigration status, and more. In fact, in the minutes after DOGE accessed the NLRB's systems, someone with an IP address in Russia started trying to log in, according to Baroulis' disclosure. Whistleblowers can securely provide tips to ProPublica. ProPublica is a nonprofit newsroom focused on revealing injustices and abuses of power. Its stories are often fueled by tips and evidence from readers. It's helpful if tips are specific and include evidence to back up the tip. This is how tips can be shared with ProPublica. Sending something by U.S. mail without a return address is one of the most secure ways to communicate. Authorities would need a warrant to intercept it in transit and open it. For better security, one can mail a package or an envelope from an unfamiliar sidewalk box instead of a company or agency mailroom. A sidewalk box is also subject to less surveillance than a post office. You can mail paper materials or digital files on, for example, a thumb drive. Address mail to ProPublica, 155 Avenue of Americas, 13th floor, New York, New York, 10013. Sources of information for this story are NPR and ProPublica. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Carol Weidel.
In honor of National Poetry Month, we bring you a musical version of a 1912 poem written by James Oppenheim, associated with women trade unionists. It's called Red and Roses and is performed by RNA at Rocky Lou Productions.
As we go marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill lofts gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses. For the people hear us singing, bread and roses, bread and roses. As we go marching, marching, we battle too for men. For they are women's children, and we mother them again. Our lives shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses. As we go marching, marching, unnumbered women dead go crying through our singing their ancient call for bread. Small art and love and beauty, their drudging spirits knew. Yes, it is bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too. As we go marching, marching, we bring the greater days. The rising of the women means the rising of the race. No more the drudge and idler, tend that toil where one reposes, but a sharing of life's glories, bread and roses, bread and roses.
Well, that was beautiful. Wisconsin has an anti-boycott law, an executive order in effect targeting boycotts for Palestinian rights. To challenge this, the Wisconsin Right to Boycott is holding a lobby day and rally this Wednesday, April 23rd at 9 a.m. What it terms a call to those who value their constitutional rights. That's the Right to Boycott Lobby Day and Rally this Wednesday, April 23rd at 9 a.m. at the Capitol in Madison.
Waves of protest are spreading, with crowds growing each time as the president cuts staff and programs that affect millions of Americans. Tomorrow, Saturday, April 19th, we'll see the next march circling the state capitol and rallying in James Madison Park. Then, on May 1st and May 2nd, essential immigration workers and their families will march in Madison and Milwaukee. A large crowd is expected. Voces de la Frontera is seeking assistance in advance of these immigrant protests for transportation and organizing expenses. Then on Monday, April 21st, 5 to 7 p.m. at Linden Co-Housing, 2082 Winnebago Street, Voces de la Frontera will describe their work and seek support. The program includes a light dinner, refreshments, and a short presentation. Now that's Monday, April 21st, starting at 5 p.m. at Linden Co-Housing, 2082 Winnebago Street.
I'm Jimmy Poo. Thank you to Labor Radio Collective, including reporters Greg Jaboski, Jeanann Ramsey, Carol Weidel, Sean Hangerup, Brian Novolinsky-Lois, assistants Robin G., and damage control specialists, and our favorite, Joanne Powers. Special thanks to Keith Steffens, our reader coordinator, and to all the readers and members of IBEW, Local 2304, WORT, Staff Collective.
And thank you, Jimmy Coonan. And I'm Sandy Park. We would also like to thank all of the generous contributors to Labor Radio and WORT. Now, please stay tuned for the Blues Cruise with Dave Watts and the Professor Bill Clark.
Party on, guys.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Attention WORT volunteers and donors. WORT is holding an election for two open participating member seats and one open listener sponsor seat to serve three-year terms on the Board of Directors of Back Porch Radio Broadcasting, Inc., with terms beginning at the annual meeting in June and concluding at the annual meeting in June 2028. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work within a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Thursday, May 15th to ensure consideration. Voting begins Thursday, May 29th and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 29th. More information and board applications are available at wardfm.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT, a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.